When we decided to commemorate September 11th with music and readings, we called Sekou Sundiata, a poet who grew up in New York and still lives there. The Village Voice once said, he is to contemporary African-American poetry what Marvin Gaye was to modern soul. We found out he'd been in the hospital on September 11th. He'd been through a long period of bad health, starting with kidney failure and a kidney transplant. After getting back on his feet, he was on his way to his comeback performance when he crashed his car in a snowstorm and broke his neck, requiring another year of recovery. Luckily, he had no paralysis. It was a side effect of his kidney surgery that had him back in the hospital on the 11th. A few days later, he was well enough to speak at a 9/11 teach-in. On his way, he stopped at Ground Zero. That visit led to this reflection in an essay that we asked him to read.
Here's how the story of my visit to Ground Zero ends. I went to the subway station to catch an uptown train to the teach-in. The station was in a remote location, and it seemed to be empty as I started down the stairs. I could hear footsteps coming up the stairs and towards me. When I turned to go down the second set of steps, I saw an Arab man coming up. He passed without looking at me and didn't say a word. All you could hear was our footsteps. The faces of the Al-Qaeda suspects who hijacked the airplanes and carried out the suicide missions came into my mind in the fashion of a police photo book. Something told me that this guy had just planted a bomb in the subway and that it was going to go off as soon as I got down the stairs. The odor of melted steel, concrete dust, and weak old underground fires were heavy in my nostrils. I stopped and told myself I would be a fool to walk any further. I turned to see the man standing street level at the top of the stairs. He was looking around to one side and then the next. I started to walk back up the stairs when I got a good look at his face. Suddenly, he became a Puerto Rican. I laughed that funny, but it ain't funny laugh at myself. Went downstairs and caught the train. I am a lifelong New Yorker. I grew up with close ties to my family roots in the South, but I am a New Yorker, which is a very involved and contentious identity. I am bound to the land, to the city, the streets, the cityscape, the neighborhoods, the people, the languages, the waterways, the open spaces, the corruptions, the driving habits, the impatience, the sudden flashes of brutality, and unexpected flowerings of kindness, the racism and poverty, all of it. As a kid, I used to play at the Polo Grounds, the home of the New York Giants, and I could see Yankee Stadium from my living room window. I've been eating Puerto Rican and Cuban food, Italian and Indian food, Japanese and Chinese food, ever since I was a teenager. I used drugs and sold drugs on those streets. I went to jail on Rikers Island. I joined the revolution on the campus of City College. I always understood that these things and more made me a New Yorker. I didn't understand until the aftermath that they also made me an American. I didn't understand until I saw the flames from the burning towers and smelled the smoke from the crater that you could see from miles away. I've been trying to get at this American feeling that surfaced in me. My writing life began from the outside looking in. I wrote as the un-American American. That's how I think and feel to this day. But that feeling is complicated by the aftermath, and it will have implications for aesthetic choices I will make. It seems that I'm being forced to confront, to imagine, to invent what it means to be an American. Again, forced to think about what it is that makes us diverse, but also what it is that makes us one. And what do I mean by makes us one anyway? I began answering that question by noticing a number of transactions that took place in a short period of time on those subway stairs. The most important to me was how willing I was to flip the script, how the profile became the profiler, how the victim became the victimizer. What if he was Puerto Rican, but he greeted me with, "Assalamu alaikum, papi"? Now that I'm feeling all American, what kind of American was I going to be? What's that song from back in the day? Paranoia strikes deep. Into your life it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man comes and takes you away. Stop, yeah, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What kind of intersection was that? Earth, water, fire, air. What I call the essential energies have been on my mind for a few years. I'm on the upside of a prolonged personal battle with illness, disease, and injury, and for several months I've been working on a one-man performance piece based on that experience. So much of what went on during this period came down to essential energies, blood, minerals, chemistry, respiration, metabolism, and so forth. The rest of the world fades into the background as these things come up front. They take center stage with an undeniable force and presence. Not just for me, but for all the patients I met. Whatever titles we wore, whatever categories we attended to or praised, were qualified by our hospital gowns and our IV poles, an absurd and poetic unity of possibility. I guess that I felt there was the same kind of unity in the experience of the attacks and the aftermath. It is a kind of awareness that war sharpens and heightens in ways that peace has not yet. Or, put another way, we don't know what peace can do.
Seika Sundiata, thank you for reading that. You know, you've written that as soon as the attacks were reported on September 11th, your phone began to ring, and the lost army of protest was calling you to read poetry at rallies and calling on you to denounce U.S. foreign policies. And I get the feeling that you thought they expected you to say the predictable things, but you wanted to wait and figure out what you were really thinking and feeling. And I'm wondering, what are some of the things that have surprised you most about what you were thinking and feeling and what you've continued to think and feel?
Well, I guess the main thing here for me is, you know, taking off on something I just read, and it also appears in the poem, is that, you know, I've had this strange hyphenated relationship to America, you know, African hyphen American. And that really, once I became conscious of it, I realized that that feeling had been there almost all of my conscious life. And by the time I reached young adulthood, you know, I was politicized and radicalized by the movement of the time. So I was very involved and spent a great deal of time in the movement, organizing, protesting, etc. And I realized that in that process of being oppositional to many of the things that were going on, that somehow or another I lost this sense of what it meant for me to be an American in some fundamental way. And I think that's the case not only for me, but also for many people in my generation who came up during that time and who were also active in the anti-war movement or, you know, the women's movement or black liberation movement, that we got so caught up in being oppositional and fighting against that we really never took the time to lay out what it is that we're for. So for me, when the attacks happened and I went to Ground Zero, I felt like an American. You know, this overwhelming sense of some kind of unity or some kind of feeling for America came up in me. And it had nothing to do with the flag. It had nothing to do with calling everybody heroes. It had nothing to do with the benighting of Rudolf Giuliani as Sir Rudy. It didn't have anything to do with that. But I was not clear about what it did have to do, you know, what it was connected to, what it was about.
Do you have a sense of that now?
Well, I tried to get at it even then, you know, and part of it had to do with it does have a lot to do with the land, you know, and the history of the land and what I call the ghost, you know, the land in general of, you know, of the United States of America, but also in New York in particular. You know, my life is unexplainable without the streets of New York City, without the history of the streets of New York City, these neighborhoods. And, you know, my first this happened here, my first that happened there. It, you know, it's all part of my personal mythology and who I am. Other aspects of it, I think I'm still grappling for, you know, still trying to come to terms with. And I feel lonely in that. You know, I mean, I talk to other people, I have other friends, other writers and artists who, you know, are also think along these lines. But I realized I could not rely on what we would in the days gone by call the left. You know, that I could not, that somehow I felt the left was stuck in some Cold War rhetoric and perspective that really couldn't address this.
My guest is poet Seiku Sundiata. We'll continue after a break. This is Fresh Air. This is a special edition of Fresh Air commemorating September 11th. Let's get back to our interview with poet Seiku Sundiata. Now, you were in the hospital on September 11th, and you were in a very compromised and vulnerable physical condition. And you had been physically broken for a couple of years before that.
Right.
And I'm wondering if you think it affected your response to seeing your city broken at the same time, you were feeling broken yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in a number of ways. One is that, you know, going through the illness and all that surgery made me think about surfaces and things below the surface. You know, having been under anesthesia so much during that period of time, you know. And, you know, this whole life of the body and what's going on, you know, as we sleep, so to speak, you know, all of these chemical, how much we're dependent on these chemical reactions and these delicate balances of minerals and, you know, all of these things, you know. So I think I've become much more aware of that. And thinking about the attack on the towers and thinking about that crater, I really did think about how much the underlife of the city, you know, all of the history that exists below the surface, below the ground that's now exposed in that crater, how much that underlife really animates the city day to day, from neighborhood to neighborhood, you know, whether it's the African burial grounds or the old Native American horse trails or, you know, neighborhoods where gangs, you know, street gangs, all that folklore and mythology is there and it's out of view. But, you know, I believe that it really animates things from day to day.
You've written a poem about September 11th. Can you read an excerpt of that for us?
Sure. I'll start with, the poem is really, I don't know, at this point, it's still in progress and it's untitled and it's about five stanzas. And I'm going to read the last two stanzas. What comes before is really just an account of, you know, where I was, how I felt when I discovered the attacks. And also of that subway journey into the city, and getting off the train and going to Ground Zero. So I'll take up the poem at that point, the point at which I go to Ground Zero, which I call it, which I'm describing as the crater in the poem. The crater recalled a lonely planet, a pockmarked moon of ridges and man-sized valleys, earth movers, dump trucks, and cranes. A priest kneels in the powdered ash. The rescue stops for the Holy Ghost and the angel of death to cross paths. Someone calls for the jaws of life. Earth, water, fire, air. The sky, Ellington blue, pours over the harbor. Black smoke curling into its soft watercolors, mixing those burning isms into a mute and inscrutable beauty. I stood citizen to citizen three rows deep. A man flipped through the daily news, matching pictures to the scene. A couple in a doorway argued hip-hop versus R&B in times like these. They look up from their ideologies to agree, Mercury must be retrograde. A woman to my right worried a flag the size of a handkerchief, the kind you get at the fairgrounds. And yes, little Emmett Till came to me, a face that long ago cured my faith in that schoolboy lyric, so that I could no longer sing with the voice of praise as if it was my own, oh, beautiful, four spacious skies. I walked the Avenue of the Americas, past the photocopy gallery of the missing and the dead, mounted on buildings and store windows and lobbies, posted on police barricades along the streets. I searched for familiar faces and found a few, but the names were wrong, yet I knew them all by their fiction. The light-hearted Capricorn from Seven Hills, playing with her cat on a crate and barrel sofa. The Hindu newlywed who immigrated from India to the Golden City. Nestor, the brother of Milagros, menacing the lens ringside at the gym. A Miss Trinidad look-alike caught in a calypso on Eastern Parkway. And a pensive man in one of his moods, red, black, and blue at the root. I could see my own anonymous face in that show, cut and pasted above a word or two about my love of swimming in the ocean and my taste for sentimental ballads where what's missing and gone is half the song. I drowned in a flood of burning jet fuel. Down was looking like up when I jumped with my brains on fire. I ran from the falling tower and wandered for days. I heard a Montuno Iwawanko calling from miles away. I followed horse trails through secret pathways. E pluribus unum. I went home and wrote history to the bone. I have been written.
Writer and performer Sekou Sundiata, the poem and essay he read from are published in the journal Heart, Human Equity Through Art. I'm Terry Gross, and this is a special edition of Fresh Air.